I get that on the record here in a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, today is September 30th, 2010. It is approximately 2:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This is the interview of Frank Sampedro, former employee of Countrywide, being conducted via phone from the FCIC large conference room. Present from the FCIC is myself, George Wall, Tom Borgers.
Tom Borgers, that's B-S and boy, O-R-G-E-R-S.
Tom Krebs, K-R-E-B-S.
John Armstrong, A-R-M-S-T-R-O-N-G.
And that's Wall, W-A-H-L. Before we go ahead with the questioning, if I could get a verbal acceptance of the fact that this phone call is being recorded by the FCIC, which we have no objection to being recorded on the other end, but if Mr. Sampedro, and if I could get outside counsel to acknowledge as well that we're recording.
This is Eric. Go ahead, Frank.
Frank Sampedro has no objections.
Yeah, Eric Mogul, Nick Kent, Paul Winkett, Wilmer Hale, we have no objection.
And gentlemen, for the record, could you just please state and spell your names?
Sure. It's Eric with a C, and Mogilniki is spelled M-O-G-I-L-N-I-C-K-I.
Paul Winky, spelled W-I-N-K-E.
Francesco, F-R-A-N-C-I-F-C-O, known by Frank. San Pedro, capital S-A-N space, capital P-E-D-R-O.
Okay, gentlemen, we're not going to take a whole lot of time, but just to give you a brief background, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission is a bipartisan commission created out of the Fraud Enforcement Recovery Act of 2009, and our mission is to examine the causes of the financial crisis, and that's why we're interviewing you today, Mr. Sampedro, since you were, we'll get into your formal title, but because of your former position at Countrywide Bank, that's why we're here today. If I could, Mr. Sampedro, if you could start with your educational and professional background, beginning with college and working up to the present.
I attended no formal college. However, I did take classes offered by three particular trade associations in the University of San Diego for community banking, at the University of Wisconsin for operational management, and at the University of Maryland for security officers for the financial industry.
And these were certificate programs?
They were.
Okay. Do you have any dates for those programs, Mr. Sampedro?
San Diego, University of San Diego, and I'm going to give you approximate dates because I don't have them in front of me.
That's fine.
But the approximate date for the University of San Diego, I believe, was 1989, and the University of Wisconsin was 1992, and I believe it was 1994 for the University of Maryland.
Okay. And your professional background?
I, how far am I going to go?
As far as it's relevant to your position at Countrywide, whether you, any position you've held at a financial industry or in doing investigations, things of that nature.
I joined Imperial Bank in 1980. In Imperial Bank, I started as a branch officer, and then I went on to fraud prevention and eventually security officer, which included fraud investigations. Upon the acquisition of Imperial Bank by Comerica Bank, I remained as the investigations manager for the West Coast for Comerica Bank. And then I joined, in 2004, I joined Countrywide's Fraud Investigations Unit.
Now, Mr. Sampedro, do you have any other certifications?
I'm a certified fraud examiner.
Okay, I just wanted to get you that on the record, too.
When was that, Mr. Sampedro?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
When did you become a certified fraud examiner?
1992.
All right, sir, can you just go into a little bit depth about your position at Comerica Bank in terms of being the investigative manager for the West Coast, like what your roles and responsibility was?
I manage two investigators. We received referrals from fraud detection systems and or employees and or customers. And then we opened cases and investigated the circumstances and concluded with a finding of fraud or not fraud.
And so is this yourself and two other investigators?
That's correct.
For the whole West Coast operations of Comerica?
That's correct.
And when did you leave Comerica?
My last official day in the bank was January, I'd like to say 17th, maybe the 19th, of 2004.
And why did you leave Comerica?
I was laid off.
And how did you become to be employed at Countrywide?
Somebody told me they were hiring for the fraud department, and I sent a resume.
And when was it? Can you give dates for these occurrences?
That's my recollection. I think I made my first contact in late April, and I was hired. My date of hire was June 1st, 2004.
Okay, and what was the position that you were specifically hired as or for?
I was the manager of the fraud. We were in the fraud department, and there were two departments inside, and I was the one that was in charge of the major cases.
Can you elaborate what your roles and responsibility was in that position and how many people worked for you?
I believe when I started, we had six people with us. And we had cases that were referred to us from a variety of sources within Countrywide. We received them from the production companies. We received them from calls to the hotline. And we received them, well, the hotline included both internal and external referrals. And that was the main source of our cases.
Now, what specific department, I mean, were you in charge of handling strictly mortgage fraud investigations, or did it bleed over into other lines of Countrywide's business?
Let me clarify something you said earlier, and I should have done it at the time. I was not employed by Countrywide Bank. I was employed by Countrywide Home Loans. And there were primarily production divisions who also had a quality control / fraud unit that worked closely with us, and we got a lot of the referrals from them.
Okay, after that, Frank, what was your next role?
I'm sorry?
What was your next role? What was your title at that point?
At that point, I was the first vice president. And then we, our department started, I think, was created by the bank to centralize fraud investigations by the bank, by the company, I think a year, year and a half prior to that. And as we began evolving, then I became a senior vice president in charge of the specialized unit, where we went and started doing primarily field work. So we had cases that were major throughout all 50 states. And I had at the time, I think we still had 6 employees, but we worked very closely with other front quality control units of the production divisions. And we went through the country doing investigations.
That was nationwide you were responsible for fraud investigations?
Yes, sir.
You and the 6 other investigators?
That's correct.
You said you got referrals from all various sources within countrywide. On average, how many referrals are we talking about in terms of a day, a week, a year? I realize you might not have specifics, but if you could ballpark estimate for us.
I know there are some numbers that kind of stuck in my head. I know the first year I was there, and this is not, I want to clarify, this is not fraud cases. These are referral cases.
Right.
The process was we got a case, we got a referral, that became the case. We did an analysis, and then we did findings.
Right.
The first year we had approximately 5,000. I think the second year we doubled that to in excess of 10,000. And I think the year after that we doubled it again.
So
those are ballpark figures.
All right. So correct me if I'm wrong. When you say first year, you mean 2004. You had approximately 5,000 internal referrals of fraud at Countrywide Home Loans.
Okay.
And
let me back up because I want to be extremely precise and give you accurate information. The department was comprised of several different units. My unit did not get 5,000 cases. The department got 5,000 cases. I don't know how many of those ended up on my lap to investigate. Is that clear enough?
Yeah, so you're talking the overall total.
It doesn't appear that you got much sleep that year anyway. Looks like you were on the road a bit. Is that fair?
We were busy. Fortunately, we had very good partners in the production units upon which we leveraged to help us with the workload.
How were you organized within your unit, your division?
I reported to the director of fraud. He reported to, I can't remember his title, but he was within the governance unit of the structure Countrywide. This individual had both us and the audit department, and I can't remember what else. He had, I think, 3 major departments that reported to him.
Do you remember who the director of Do you remember who the director of fraud was?
Eric Stein. Eric with a K. Stein.
And that was your immediate supervisor?
That is correct.
How did you organize the investigation of your of the matters that were brought to your attention? Would you just assign them out to one of your, was it then 4 or 5 investigators, or would you work team it up? How'd you do that?
You analyze a case like you do in any investigative unit. You look at the risk, you look at the gravity of the case, and you look at the urgency of the case. A case that may be referred to us that was on a loan that was in process would receive high priority than if we were doing an investigation of a loan that was funded 2 years ago.
Were the higher dollar loans kind of more of a priority than, say, a lower dollar loan? Or did it depend? Were these triaged on a case by case basis?
Yeah, that is the right word. You triage the case and you determine what ought to be given a higher priority than other, and you assign your resources that way.
So, let me just throw an example out at you. If you had a couple smaller dollar loans that exhibited some evidence of fraud, but they were all kind of nexusing back at one source, you would throw your resources at that as opposed to, say, the $2 million home that had exhibited some evidence of fraud?
It's difficult to explain, but it's not really. You triage the exposure. The immediate responsibility of any fraud unit is to prevent losses to the company. So that was one of the determinants. Another determinant is this a one-off incident, or is this appears to be a trend? It's, I don't know if that gives you a sense.
I just wanted to get a little more clarity on approximately how much fraud investigations were was for internal versus external fraud.
Well, it probably 50-50. When you have, these are not holdups in a bank. This is a loan process which has many facets. So it could be a combination of the customer committing fraud, maybe a combination, maybe just the loan office committing fraud, maybe a combination of the both. I don't know if we have, I certainly don't remember the statistics. So anything that I could give you would be a guess. But they were fairly evenly divided.
Mr. San Pedro, you mentioned that you started out with approximately 5,000 instances of, well, total fraud. Then it.
No, that's not what he said.
5,000 cases.
So what? I think I clarified it, George. It was that you talking?
Yes.
The department received 5,000 referrals.
Okay.
And then it doubled every other year after that.
Right.
Referral does not necessarily equate to fraud case.
Right, okay, so you had...
The cases we received were found that there were no fraud involved.
All right, so you had 5,000 referrals. It doubles the next year approximately over 10,000. It doubles the next year after that to over 20,000. Did you still have just the 6 investigators there?
My unit still had that. The department had grown. And like I said, we were not the only department. We had the production units had very robust units that we worked with that did similar work to what we did. And those units were experienced significant growth in their staffing.
Would you draw on them for resources, personnel?
I'm sorry, sir?
Would you draw on that production units for resources and personnel?
We worked extremely close together. I developed an awful lot of good professional and personal rapport with their heads, and we teamed up to accomplish something that I think was very commendable for the company.
Of the 5,000 and then subsequent 10,000 and then 20,000 referrals you received from 2004 to 2006, approximately, and I know it's just a guess on your part, how many referrals would yield a valid complaint?
I don't want to speculate because I don't have it. I do know that we were considered to be the highest filer of suspicious activity reports in the country. So, if you want to wish to draw a conclusion from that, perhaps you can, but I would be guessing, sir, and I don't like to guess.
Mr. San Pedro, do you feel that you had adequate resources to do your job at Countrywide?
We were provided significant resources. We did have resources that were not necessarily people. We had very robust computer systems that did an awful lot of work for us. What was commonly known among the acronym was CLUES. It was a Countrywide Loan Underwriting Expert System, which had to take all of their loans through it before they could get approved, yielded a lot of suspicious activity that we could investigate if it raised to the level after triage that we should look at it. We have Frauditor, which was a system that was considered to be industry standard that we had that would test the values of the appraisals. So we had a lot of systems. We used to meet monthly with all the division heads for the production divisions to this was scheduled meetings that took place directed by Mr. Stein to bring them up to speed on what were the fraud trends that were being surfaced so that they could then put modifications into their systems to be able to detect them on time before the loans were funded. So we, this is more directed to George than the rest of you, you never have enough resources if you want to look at it that way, but we did have, in my opinion, we have significant resources at our disposal to do the work we were tasked to do, and I think the results of the statistics of my department proved that the job was being accomplished.
Mr. San Pedro, if you could, walk me through the process of from underwriting to when it gets to your department of, you know, say underwriting flags a loan as being suspicious or having some evidence of fraud in it. Can you walk me through the steps of the investigation, beginning with underwriting up until the end?
I'm not a production expert, so typically what happened on some of the cases before it got to us, we needed to look at it again to validate in our own mind what the thought process that they had gone through to get it to us to believe that it was a suspected fraud incident. You would have areas of like inflated income. You would have areas like improper valuation. One of the other ones that was very easy to triage is our systems in the background could scour the entire database for countrywide and point out if you were applying, for instance, for a home or occupied loan property, which has better rates and fees than in non-owner occupied, and say, well, this person has another house someplace else. So that typically came to us. We triaged the loan. We then assigned it, and people went to investigate. Does that give you some idea of what you were looking for?
Yes, and Mr. San Pedro, if you could just take us through, I'm going to kind of just throw you an open-ended question. You were at Countrywide from 2004 and 2008, and you've been around the country in 50 states or probably close to it. And what were you seeing in the market developing as you and your staff were tackling your task of investigating the major cases for Countrywide? Just, this is open-ended, you know, just take as much time as you want to give us your story.
Let me give you what I think you ask. But you did. Let me ask, because I want to give you the information that is accurate. Are you trying to ask what did I see as a trend across the country? Are you asking me what trends did I see in the industry, or what trends did I see in Countrywide?
All three. I want you, this is open-ended, you can tell us in any way you want, take as much time as you want, and you got the floor. And, you know, we didn't want to, you know, put any constraints on you, so take as much time to give us your story.
There were three main areas that we typically run into. Inflated income was one of them, and inflated values was the other one, and occupancy. And we could see that given the products that were authorized to be utilized, specifically the no income, no asset, or NINAs, or the stated income, stated asset, or CSAs, there was opportunity for people to get creative. And so, as we talk about 2004 to 2008, what I saw from my perspective in Countrywide is that we were so focused, not just my department, but the company was so focused to root out all the fraud that they could possibly find, that we continued to get better and better and better at it. And for two reasons, our systems kept getting fine-tuned as we found different ways to slice the bread. The units that have been working primarily on quality control, with whom we began to establish a partnership, became more and more effective. Countrywide had a very strict policy, that got published every year by a broadcast that went to each and every employee of the company, regardless of their position, that clearly stated that they had not just a legal obligation, but a corporate obligation to report fraud. So consequentially, as we got better and we started working more effectively, we got busier and busier. But the fraud didn't change. I mean, fraud has been with us, unfortunately, forever. Across the industry and in our company. And so we just saw the same fraud, but we were able to detect more of it. That's the biggest frustration, since you are asking about that, etc., is that that there was one piece which we understood. I mean, bear in mind, I was part of the International Association of Financial Fraud Investigators, which is a worldwide organization. George may be familiar with it. And it involves, you know, sworn officers and federal agencies as well as private industry. The biggest deficiency that we as a group found, and this is not just Countrywide, but across the board, is that we would come up with all these cases and we would file them as we were required to do. If there was a particularly egregious case, we may actually, after filing, pick up the phone and call the head of the financial investigations unit, primarily of the Bureau, and say, hey, we just filed a SAR. I think you got a lot of meat on this case. You may want to look at it. But at the same time, as you may recall, the focus of the Bureau was on counterterrorism, not financial crimes. So we had among my peers, internal as well as external, a deep frustration that the work we did and the fraud we routed and presented was not being prosecuted by those who were charged with that duty. Understandably, because bandwidth exists on all the way across the spectrum. And so the group, the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators, in, I want to say 2006, created an initiative to start teaching local prosecutors and local investigative agencies, such as sheriff's departments and police departments, how to look at a real estate fraud case so that they could apply local statutes to go and prosecute it. But that's kind of my bird's eye view of the question that you posed to me.
Why don't we go into some more specifics? What were some of the biggest, the two or three biggest external cases you worked on?
Tom, I'm old, and my brain cells sometimes don't connect, so don't blame me if I cannot give you too many specifics. I don't recall some of the names of the participants, but right after I joined, one of the bigger cases we had was flipping of some properties in Florida, which resulted in significant losses to the company. This developer had bought some condos in Central Florida and flipped them twice before he put them out of the market and started selling them. And the values were so inflated that it was pathetic. That was one of the cases. External, let's see something else.
Do you remember the approximate value of the loans or the loss to Countrywide on that case?
George, I think the loss was about $6 million, but I'm widening it. That's the only one case that comes to mind. Like as an organized multiple loan issue that came our way.
Frank, wasn't there a major $100 million case that I read in 2006?
I don't know what it is, George. It may have been, and I don't remember details of it.
Mr. San Pedro, can you talk about, do you feel you had any obstacles in your job? Or for that matter, people that work for you, did they relay to you any frustrations or obstacles they felt they had in their job?
When I started out, and I'm going to give you a succinct answer so that I can accurately frame it. I don't know how long you've been in law enforcement, George, but internal affairs is never very fun. The regular investigative populace does not look at internal affairs with a lot of warm and fuzzy. So when I first came in the department, our department was fairly new, and the reaction I had by many of the production units is, you don't understand what you're talking about. I think we were very successful in gaining their confidence and their support, and whatever I can tell you that I did not have any pushback after I was able to properly explain the issues and the reasons. And in fact, senior management in the production divisions were extremely supportive of us when we determined, hey, so-and-so's got to go, or this is wrong. The frustration that my employees could have had was some of them were local law enforcement background, and they had to learn how to be just as effective within the corporate environment, and that we were able to accomplish very successfully. So I hope that gives you the impression that I experienced while I was there.
Do you ever hear stories, or do you have firsthand knowledge of a sales associate at Countrywide Home Loans overriding a fraud investigator and underwriter on a loan?
They very seldom got away with it, because typically, I can think of one particular case, and don't ask me for the name or the date, because I don't, but I remember the case where the loan officer just basically pushed it through, and I became aware of it by my investigator, and I called my counterpart at the Consumers Market Division, which was headquartered in Plano, Texas, and the loan was never funded.
So is that... Would you say that's a false statement, then, that sales associates could override fraud investigators and underwriters?
No. What I can say is that the only time that I can think of that that happened, we were successful in stopping the loan from being funded.
Did you ever hear rumors of a fraud investigator being banned from a local Countrywide branch?
This is Eric. I don't understand exactly what we would get from knowing whether or not he heard such a rumor. I mean, you guys, if he has no personal information, I think you guys have to look elsewhere for details on this.
Well, he can answer he has no personal information, and we'll go on.
Okay.
Not that I know of, because they couldn't bag us from a branch.
Mr. San Pedro, as a general basis, and I understand the difficulty in recollection, but what would you say the percentage of internal fraud, the employee corruption cases you encountered, versus the borrower or external or promoter fraud from the outside that your division covered?
Would you say the last part again, sir?
Well, in your experience there at Countrywide.
I would have to say that probably the majority was external.
And so the prior answers you gave us about the three main areas, the inflated income, the home values, and the occupancy, that would be the three principal areas of the external fraudulent activity that you observed while employed Countrywide?
That's correct.
What were the three principal areas or the problems that you encountered, to the extent that you did encounter them, on the internal corruption?
Almost on the same level of the, let's talk about the experience that I'm most familiar with. On the consumer market division, and I cannot tell you whether it was over the 4 years that I spent in Countrywide, the last two, our unit in consortium with the division, the consumer market division, or was known as CMD, we were responsible for about 300 terminations there. And in those, what you would find is that a loan officer had secured an appraisal that was inflated. And we had a process to determine that. It was a pretty robust process. And the other one was the manipulation of income to fit a particular standard, and a variation of which was that they would know what the income was because the customer had presented a tax return, and based on the stated tax return, they wouldn't qualify for the loan. So they went from a full documentation loan to a CISA or an ENA, where they just put down an amount of income that would make the loan qualify.
Was it your experience in those cases that the borrower readily accepted a number proffered by the employee?
Um, In my experience, the I'll give you my personal experience on one particular loan. This individual who professed to be a doctor in Florida had put in an application where he was making $40,000 a month. And I had the conversation with the so-called doctor who was not a doctor. and he knew he was lying. He tried to wiggle out of it, but we finally got him to admit that, yeah, he just figured out that's what he had to make, and that's what he put down.
And that was with the active, and that was with the done in concert with the agent representing the lender.
Yes.
Okay. And again, I, while I understand and I very much appreciate your having given us this one little question, is it do you have a sense as to how prevalent this practice might have been within your organization?
Within our organization, I don't think it was that prevalent. Remember, we had a significant number of cases that resulted in 300 terminations. We had over 50,000 employees. So, in my experience, and I wish we were face-to-face, the majority of the employees that I came in contact with were very hardworking, honest professionals. Unfortunately, in life as it is, you always will find people that want to take the shortcut. But it was not a practice that was condoned or a practice that was allowed.
And nobody here would suggest otherwise. The question I have for you, though, is about how often did you have occasion to take any action, corrective action involving an employee during your 3-year tenure there, say 2004, 2005, 2006?
Any time that we found an employee who had broken the rules, let's put it that way, there was an action taken. Our reports were rendered to their management and to the human resources department. When I started there, they did not want opinions from us as to corrective actions. As time evolved, they understood the value of our experience and began to ask that. And I have no recollection of any instance in which we recommended disciplinary action that it was not taken.
Did I understand you correctly to say that that was not necessarily the way it was in the formative years, but later on as you developed your expertise and you developed a relationship with the within the company, that at that point very seldom did they ever go against you? Is that correct?
Not exactly. All what right. happened is the process became far more combative at the end. At the beginning, when I started there, if someone was found to have done something wrong and we felt that disciplinary action was warranted but not given, the escalation process went from me to my boss, to his boss, to the equivalent senior management at the division level and down the line. As we successfully formed a working partnership, that red tape up at the top disappeared, and we went peer-to-peer and said, hey, listen, this doesn't make sense. And the final arbiter was human resources, who then made the final recommendation for. And like I said, I don't recall any instance where it ended up into a fight over what was right or what was wrong. It was just very clear that we aimed to root out all the fraud that we could find, and the people that committed it suffered the consequences.
Approximately how many of your inquiries, your investigations with respect to what you suspected was corrupt action on behalf of an employee resulted in termination? And I know you can't give me exact numbers, but I just want your feeling.
My feeling, sir, is that whenever we found wrongdoing on the part of an employee, the cases were adjudicated accordingly. Meaning, if the transgression was purposeful and egregious, they were terminated. If it was, you know, lack of training, and people do make mistakes, and what appears as fraud may have been an honest mistake, the act is still wrong, but is not fraud upon the employee. They were also attended to, but not necessarily terminated.
I understand that, and I very much appreciate that response because it helps us understand your position. But what I would like to get from you is a sense of the numbers. 5, 10, 15, 2, 3. And again, you don't have to be exact.
My sense is the only statistic that I remember distinctly was the consumer market division where I spent most of my effort. 300 were terminated over that period, probably 10 times as many, or 3,000 in the same period, suffered some sort of disciplinary action.
And you say that was over the period of time that you were there with the consumer market division? These are approximate
but the numbers.
Approximate.
The numbers are in reference to the consumer markets division, which is, I think, was the largest production division for the company.
Uh-huh. Very good.
And that was involved. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
How many of those 300, approximately 300 terminations were prosecuted, either civilly or criminally?
I don't have an answer, because I don't know.
And how many instances involving those 300 was a recommendation made by you or your department that they be criminally or civilly prosecuted?
I'm going to be lawyering. Our duty was to report any criminal activity in accordance with the Bank Secrecy Act. And we did so on each and every instance where fraud was found. If the fraud was egregious enough, I may pick up the phone and call the local FBI unit on financial crimes and make them aware of it. The decision to prosecute, open a case, or move forward rest with them, not with us. So, that's all I can tell you.
Well, do I understand then, I mean, as a result of that, that with respect to every one of the 300 cases that involve fraud, in your opinion, however, that you did make that a criminal or some type of attempt that a referral was made?
If it was fraud, a referral was made. I'm trying to remember specifics, but typically we had systems that would come up. I mean, the production divisions had very robust systems that would identify trends. The one that you have just reminded me of happened in Chicago, and there was some activity there that was suspect.
And you were the person that found out that uncovered that case.
Which of the two?
On the both cases, the Boston and the Chicago case.
His office.
Actually, in both cases, the units that belong to the production agencies were the ones that gave us the heads up. Then we sort of had a war council and decided how we're going to approach it, and we went from there.
Any other similar cases around the country?
None that comes to mind.
Frank, was the type of behavior exhibited in the Chicago case and the Boston case, was that typical or was that rare of activity by loan officers?
That was rare. As I said again, and I want to emphasize it, because if it was otherwise, I would be saying it was otherwise. The majority of the people I dealt with were very honest, very hardworking professionals. The vein that ran through those that we found that were not so honest or professional was a total, complete disregard to what the company stood for and what its policies were. So they were rare. They were people that didn't have any business doing what they were doing. But it was not a prevalent thing.
Besides these two cases, are we triggering any other memories about some of your other big cases over the years?
No, not really. I will tell you that my investigators did an awful lot of yeoman work when it came to this. I mean, they really worked hard. I happen to have been personally involved in those two cases, so there is a very vivid memory of them. The rest of them, it's another case.
Mr. San Pedro, do you have any knowledge of retribution by anybody countrywide, or let me rephrase, were anyone that you worked with, were they retaliated against for filing, for calling the FBI, or calling law enforcement, reporting a case?
My watch.
Anyone above you and that you know of?
No.
Mr. San Pedro, did you work with an Eileen Foster?
I did.
In what capacity?
She was my boss.
When you say she was your boss, can you be more specific? Because I know I have a lot of bosses.
I reported to Eileen Foster when I left the company. She replaced Eric Stein. That helped you.
Okay. All right. So she was the director of fraud?
Correct. I don't know if that was the title she had when she had it, but she had that position.
Do you know if she was retaliated against?
No, she wasn't, that I know of.
While you were at Countrywide?
While I was at Countrywide, yes.
Was she involved in the Boston investigation?
She was my boss while the Boston investigation was going on, yes. But she did not go there, if that's what you meant.
So she was not actually physically in Boston for the investigation?
No.
Going back to the referral prosecution aspect of the fraud you found, were any of the cases that you referred to law enforcement prosecuted?
Did he know that? Right?
I don't know that. I don't know that.
Okay, well, let me rephrase. Were you ever called or subpoenaed as a witness in a criminal or civil investigation involving fraud at Countrywide?
No.
And so today is the first day, Frank, that you're being testifying before a government entity?
That's correct. And I'm going to go back to George's question, because I may have blown through it and not fully answered. Did you say civil or criminal cases, or just criminal?
Civil or criminal that involve fraud at Countrywide?
I have been asked And currently, I think I'm on call for a wrongful termination case where the individual is suing Countrywide / Bank of America for fraud. And as you know, that all I know is the attorney for the company called me up and said, "Are you available?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Okay, stand by. We'll call you for the issue."
Okay, but that's surrounding wrongful termination, not necessarily a fraud case.
The termination arose from a fraud case, so whichever way you want to look at it. I mean, the facts are, he was terminated because fraud, and we felt he was culpable, and he was terminated. He then sued the company for wrongful termination. So, I mean, I just want to make sure that I did not.
Okay, and that's a civil matter, but you've never been subpoenaed or testified in a criminal case as well, correct?
That is correct. That is never.
Okay.
Frank, before we end our interview with you, is there anything else you would like to address to my member to our team here about? Mortgage fraud, either in Countrywide or outside of Countrywide?
I'm sorry, was that me? Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Not really. I mean, I think I've given you a fairly... My battery on my phone is dying. Let me switch before I lose you all. Give me a second.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. This little puppy is dead now. No, I think I've given you a fair account of my experience, and that has touched into what I believe. I think that, you know, Countrywide did a really good job of trying to address the prevalent fraud that was impacting the whole industry. I think that I consider my tenure there very successful in that we were able to get continuously better and better at what we were doing and created a real sense of partnership with the production divisions to do what we intended to do, which was make good loans. And the frustration that, and I'm not blaming law enforcement, I mean, it's a matter of bandwidth, that it seems like the perception to those of us who work in the industry, not just Countrywide, but in the industry, is that we were surfacing these loans, we were surfacing this problem, and nothing got done. And it's an impression. Not necessarily a fact, it's an impression.
This is just at Countrywide or in the industry as a whole?
No, in the industry. I'm not talking about Countrywide. I'm talking, I think Tom's question was generally what do you want to say about this whole issue? And that's my two cents.
Okay. Well, thank you, Frank. I wanted to thank you on behalf of the group and on behalf of the commission, and also just wanted to remind everyone to keep our conversation confidential.
Absolutely.
All right. If there's no more further questions, I have an end time of 3:46 p.m. on September 30th.